Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
An opportunity for you over this next hour to be part of our conversation. You might even like to interact with Lyle Shelton, who's going to be our guest over this next hour. We're going to talk through a whole bunch of issues, but importantly in all of this, to get something of an update as to where Lyle is at with the transition that he's made of recent times. We're going to talk about issues like Australian democracy and asking that question, is Australian democracy worth fighting for? Or is a she'll be right attitude good enough as a rising authoritarianism tries to silence the Christian voice? Well, as you know, we've been spending time discussing religious freedom and what that means to each and every Australian, with the religious freedom being reviewed by the expert panel led by Philip Ruddock. There is a lot of optimism, or should I say there's a lack of optimism, that this freedom can be maintained, that freedom as we know it. Now, along with the loss of religious freedom comes the loss of the freedom of political communication. It comes also with the loss of academic freedoms, so that universities become closed to religious thought. So you might naturally assume that without the freedoms that we take for granted will come a new authoritarianism, even enforced by the courts. And with that, the demise of democracy. Now, is that too severe a commentary? You might like to be part of our conversation today. You'll recall that the champion of the marriage debate late last year, and for a number of years, in fact, was Lyle Shelton, warning that freedoms were being trampled upon. Now, in the wake of the loss of that natural and Christian definition of marriage in February this year, Lyle Shelton announced that he would move from the Australian Christian lobby to a career in politics and to seek election under the banner of the Australian Conservatives. Well, lots for you to contribute to. We'll open our talkback lines on 1-800-316-316. You might like to join in our conversation. But a special welcome to 2020 to you, Lyle Shelton.
Thanks very much, Neil. It's great to be here in person rather than on a phone in an airport lounge or in a park somewhere in the middle of a city.
Yes. Isn't it funny to reflect on a lot of the conversations that we've had? And this is for years and years upon years now. I've forgotten how many years we've been having these updates and
quite
chats.
Too many to remember, Neil.
but the rare opportunity to be sitting face to face. And look, with your new transition, the move to the Australian Conservatives, people might be wondering, well, I haven't heard from Lyle Shelton for a little while. What's he been doing? Has he had his feet up sitting on a beach, sipping on a cocktail, relaxing? What have you been doing in this transition period?
Well, I've relocated my family to Brisbane, Queensland, my home state where I grew up. I grew up in Toowoomba, not far from Brisbane. And I've been settling into a new role with the Australian Conservatives, which is the political party that Corey Bernardi founded just over 12 months ago. I've been doing some communications and speaking work with them. But I am seeking a pre-selection with the party to be their Senate candidate at the coming federal election, which is due sometime in the early part of 2019.
At the beginning of this year, with some of the controversies going on the conservative side of politics, there were people who were predicting we might even be in for an early election. Is there any inside information that you might have with your own preparations that might indicate that we may be headed for an early trip to the polls?
Well, the Canberra bubble is always fascinating to political junkies like you and I, Neil. But look, I think that Malcolm Turnbull and the government will try and go full term. They've had a terrible time over the last little while. The same-sex marriage debate last year was considered by them a big distraction from their jobs and growth agenda. Then there was the tragedy over Barnaby Joyce's marriage breakdown and the ongoing soap opera that was at the start of this year. So they are looking for clear air to try and govern. They've got the 30 news polls coming up. People might remember that Malcolm Turnbull said 30 news polls lost was the reason for him moving against Tony Abbott in a leadership coup. So Malcolm Turnbull has now got the boot on the other foot, and he's facing 30 News polls next Monday. So there's a lot of distractions for them. They'll want to go full term to try and show the Australian people that they can govern for a period and get all this behind them.
Lyle Shelton, let me put you on the spot. Let me ask you the hard questions at the beginning of a conversation, and listeners might like to contribute. But you jumped ship from the Australian Christian Lobby. You're now the Communications Director, Federal Communications Director for the Corey Bernardi-led Australian Conservatives. People might be saying, is the Australian Conservative Party simply another addition to the Liberal National Coalition? Are you going to be courageous enough to be a critic of all sides of politics here and putting a conservative opinion? Where does the Australian Conservative Party sit with regard to what's happening on both sides of politics?
Yeah, no, fair question, Neil. And, you know, I noticed you used the words jump ship. I might just clarify that's, you know, the vernacular. I know you don't mean anything in that. I thought very long and hard and prayed very long and hard before making the decision to leave Australian Christian Lobby. That had been my life for 10 years and almost 5 years as managing director. And I didn't want to leave ACL unless there was someone who could take on the organisation, that it would be in good hands. And I really believe that in Martin Isles, the new managing director, that it is in excellent hands. Martin is an outstanding, godly young man with an incredible intellect and probably knows more about religious freedom and how we should be tackling that than just about any other person in this country. He's a lawyer by background. So the team at ACL is in great hands. I felt that towards the end of 2017, in the aftermath of the marriage campaign, that for me, after 10 years at ACL, that I needed to get into the party partisan game. And I'd liked what Corey Bernardi was doing. I could see that we had been let down by both sides of politics, by Labor particularly, which has now adopted the Green social policy, lock, stock and barrel, all the radical gender ideology aspects, anti-freedom of speech, anti-freedom of religion. That's all Labor policy now. And the coalition, sadly, under the Liberals and the Nationals, is drifting the same way. And I feel that what Corey Bernardi is doing in waving a flag for genuine conservatism, I think that aligned with my values, and that I needed to take the skills and the things that I'd learned and see if I could contribute to that as a political movement. Politics is a contest for ideas, and sometimes you've got to get involved in the actual political fight, and that's where I felt drawn and called to.
I like your terminology, genuine conservatism, because as you reflect on both sides of politics and perhaps the reason why Corey Bernardi jumped ship, there's another use sure. of that terminology, was because he saw the move to a centrism, a centrist placed political party, in the words of Malcolm Turnbull. He saw that there was a move to the left on the Liberal and National Coalition side, and therefore there was room there for a voice which was an authentic, genuine conservative voice. And authentic, genuine conservatism fits so well with those foundational Christian ethics that we as Christians talk about as a biblical foundation. And I know that's where you come from, and I think that's where the Australian Conservatives would like to go. How does that fit with what you think about where the Australian Conservatives are at the present time?
Well, certainly the political philosophy espoused by Corey Bernardi and the Australian Conservatives very much fits with my view of politics. Now, I don't assume that all Christians are conservative or right-wing, left-wing. You know, these are terms that political junkies, again, like you and I use. They serve a purpose. But I know that people don't always fit neatly in those boxes. But I do believe that we have shifted dramatically to the left. That's taken us down a path where, obviously, we've seen marriage redefined. We've seen freedom of speech and freedom of religion now under enormous pressure. We're seeing gender being radical gender ideology being imposed on us, where now you can be in trouble for not going along with this idea that you could be a boy or a girl and that you're not necessarily what your biology says. And if you don't believe that, you're a bigot and a homophobe, and you could be, you know, in trouble with the Human Rights Commission for saying otherwise. We've seen a drift towards bigger government, higher debt, $750 billion worth of debt. And of course, we're now in the grip of an energy crisis in the most resource-rich country in the world. So as a Christian, as a citizen of this nation, I'm deeply worried about the lost decade of politics that we've had, where we've had leadership coup after leadership coup on both sides of politics. Canberra is broken. There doesn't seem to be any answers. And I think that we've got to see a return to what I believe are conservative values, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, free enterprise, limited government, stable families, civil society groups like churches and clubs playing their role, not looking for the government to do everything. This is what has attracted me to the Australian Conservatives.
Of course, when you wear a non-partisan hat and as a Christian leader, and I've described you as the most significant Christian voice over the past decade here in Australia. So listeners today are obviously excited about you being involved in a political role that you are. In your former role, you might have said you should, as a Christian, join all of the parties. Join the party that you are most attracted to, that you feel as though their values are right, and be a Christian in that party. Influence the way that those policies might be formed in that party. Now you've got another hat on, which is a little bit partisan. What are your thoughts about people joining political parties? Because no doubt you'll be on a recruitment. You'll be looking for people to join the Australian Conservatives. And you'll also be looking for Christians to join political parties and get more political with their faith. What are your thoughts about how people ought to approach politics now that you're coming from a different and more partisan perspective?
I guess in many ways, my views haven't changed at all. I think Christians and all citizens should be involved in politics. That is the way we sort out the contest of ideas. We don't take up arms. We don't fight each other. We have a battle for ideas in the public discourse. And I think if Christians feel drawn to the Labor Party or the Liberal or the National parties, they should get involved and have an influence for Christ in those parties. Obviously, I've made a decision about the political philosophy that I think most aligns with my values and my faith. And I'm not saying that we're a Christian party. We are not. We're a broad-based party, although we are unashamedly based on Judeo-Christian values, and we see that those values are what has shaped Australia and Western civilization. We want to champion those values, so I guess that is a distinctive of our party. But I'd say to people, get involved, and if people feel drawn towards Australian Conservatives, get involved with us. But I think the main thing is our nation is drifting badly, and I think we've gone past the point where we can just sit by in apathy and have a nice life and expect that the country will run smoothly. We've had a broken and lost decade in politics. A lot of our problems in this nation are due to the breakdown in our political culture and the failure of political leadership to grapple with things like freedom of speech, family stability, free enterprise, big government, energy, all these things that I've mentioned. And that's why I've got in the fight. In the old days, if you cast your mind back to the American founding, people took up arms to fight for the things that they believed in. Now, I don't ever want to espouse that, but sometimes we've actually got to take up a partisan approach. Instead of taking up arms, get involved in the political fight, to use that metaphor, and that's what I feel that I need to do.
Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
We're talking with Lyle Shelton today. He is the Australian Conservatives Federal Communications Director. And we've been talking about the transition that he has made as one of the most significant voices as a Christian over this past decade. Lyle Shelton, let me keep you on the spot here with the Australian Conservatives, because I know listeners will be concerned that when they reflect on the South Australian state election of just recent times, And of course, there were Australian Conservatives candidates that ran in the Batman by-election in Melbourne. You didn't field candidates in Tasmania, but there was not a great showing for the Australian Conservatives in South Australia. What sort of reflection do you have on the way that perhaps South Australians perceived the Australian Conservatives, given that Corey Bernardi is himself a South Australian?
What we're finding, Neil, is that people don't follow politics as closely as we would like them to. We didn't do as well in South Australia as we would have liked. It was a disappointing result. We got about 3.5% of the statewide vote there. And our aim was to get Robert Brokenshire, who had previously been with Family First. People might or might not be aware that Australian Conservatives and Family First merged last year, and Robert became an Australian Conservative. Now, what we found in the South Australian election is people were looking for Family First How to Vote cards. They hadn't joined the dots with the merger. They hadn't joined the dots necessarily between Corey and Australian Conservatives, so that they know about him. They weren't quite aware of the new party's brand. So we've got some branding issues, and there's some real problems and challenges that we have. There was also the Xenophon factor in South Australia, who as you said, sucked a lot of the oxygen out of the election there. 3.5% wasn't bad, but it just wasn't quite enough, we think, to get Robert re-elected. So, yeah, very disappointing for us. We've still got a lot of work to do, but we're committed to the long haul in this.
You can have your say. You might have a question. You might have a comment. You can also respond on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Vision Radio. There is an opportunity for you to have a question or a comment about our conversation today, or 1-800-316-316. Our talkback line is open. Let's take a call from Michael in Western Australia. Hello, Michael. Welcome along.
Yeah, good morning. Listen, thank you for taking the call. I just wanted to thank you personally, Neil, because you really do open the barrel on so many topics that freedom of speech should allow you to talk about, and it doesn't.
Thank you, Michael.
I seriously mean that. You can tell by my voice, I'm an Englishman. So, unfortunately, my country of birth is about 8 or 9 years further down a bad road, yeah, on the stuff you were talking about this morning with stuff going on in schools.
We do lag a few years behind the UK and nations like Canada.
I'd love to think, though, that you remain at least that far. Maybe we can even stop it, yeah?
Did you have a thought for Lyle?
I did. Listen, it is so fantastic to hear Christian people openly getting political. I am political, and I am a Christian. I will be joining the Christian Conservatives because Jesus, like, was a politician. He went in, he shook it up, he produced a new party to vote for, yeah? Okay, don't vote for, it's as such, not democracy, yeah? But he gave people something different to think, consider. And honestly, boys, I'll be joining you lot. And please, anybody out there who's even considered, ever had that conversation where they've been called a bigot or ridiculous because they're a Christian, now's the time, because if we don't do it now, the time will pass and our grandchildren will pay a debt. So guys, have a fantastic day, and God bless you both.
Good thoughts, Michael. What are your thoughts for Michael? Lyle?
Well, I obviously really appreciate that, Michael, and agree that all of us should get involved in politics. We have to get involved. We can't stay out of our democracy, which is a participatory democracy. I'd just say that Michael's observations about his home country, England, are spot on. Just this week, there was a report in the Guardian newspaper over there about a woman who was concerned about, again, this gender ideology, which you'll hear me talking about. And she criticised on Twitter a woman who had her 12-year-old taken to Thailand to have a sex change operation. Now, this woman criticised the woman for doing this to the child and saying that this had castrated the child, which, of course, it had. Now, as a result of that, the woman who tweeted that critical comment was questioned by the UK police. Now, no charges were laid, but this woman is very, very scared because of a tweet where, yes, she pushed the edge a little bit, but she was truthful and was critical of this gender fluid theory, which is causing children now to be having irreversible surgery. She ended up getting questioned by the police. Now, I'm very, very concerned about these sort of trends. That should never have happened.
Thank you so much to Michael from WA. Our talkback line open on 1 800 316 316. Let's take a call from Chris in Victoria. Hello, Chris. Welcome along.
G'day, Neil. G'day, Lyle. People are getting in trouble for speaking out, but, you know, we can't leave it to our politicians like Lyle to do that. But every Christian, you know, these matters, like I said before many times, they affect children. And when they cause children to stumble, we can pray for God to put millstones around the neck of all these people causing this. We don't have to get in trouble for that. We can just pray on our knees and ask God to do that because, I just think, I've been praying this and I see with Daniel Andrews, with, you know, when this political corruption thing happened, I think that's a millstone around his neck. And I read, reading in the paper yesterday, Daniel Andrews is so far on the nose in Victoria, people are just, lambasting him for everything. So, just keep praying that God will put millstone around the neck of all these politicians that are doing this evil things.
Chris, good thoughts. A response from Lyle.
Look, there's real problems right across the nation, but particularly in Victoria, where Daniel Andrews is making the so-called safe schools gender fluid ideology compulsory. It's a real concern. Now, I don't want to see literal millstones around anyone's neck, but I think what the scripture is telling us there is it's very serious when you deceive children, when you give them false information that can hurt them, and that's what gender fluid ideology is doing. So, we have to be vigilant, and I'm concerned and I'm motivated to be in politics because I've seen good politicians silent about this issue for too long. And when I was at Australian Christian Lobby, and I know other groups like Family Voice and Australian Family Association, we were pushing this. It was very hard to get politicians to speak up. And that's why I want to get into the game, because I'm sick of the silence that we've seen from good people who are afraid of political correctness.
Thank you so much to Chris from Victoria. Our talkback line remains open, 1-800-316-316. Just a couple of minutes out from the news. Lyle, we started talking in the introduction for our conversation today about democracy. And we have democracy at present, but we might see it slipping through our fingers a little bit like sand because of these issues of freedom. If we don't have freedom, we have a rising authoritarianism. A rising authoritarianism means a demise for democracy. What are your concerns? And we might be able to follow through after the news.
Whenever you've got elites using what we now call political correctness to control people's thoughts and speech, the way they can talk about things, that is a form of oppression and totalitarianism. And this comes from cultural Marxism and identity politics. Now, I think what the Marxists have realized is that gulags and army tanks and shooting people, didn't go down well with the tens of millions of people who lived under the Iron Curtain. But nonetheless, their ideology and their totalitarian impulses continue, and now they're using human rights commissions to try and silence people. And we need to stand against this because there's this creeping restriction of speech in our nation, which we need to really resist. And the same-sex marriage debate was just the beginning of that. We've lost some precious freedoms as a result of that, about what we can and can't say about marriage, what can be taught and what can't be taught in Christian and Muslim schools. We have to fight to get these freedoms back, and I'm very, very concerned about it. I never thought our nation would be in this position.
Some people will say it's a long stretch of the bow to talk about gulags and tanks, and I know that's not what you're saying, but what you're talking about is something a whole lot more subtle and something that is quite deceptive and something that here is very pervasive when you start to control the way people think.
Well, the communists who I'm referring to, who killed, tens and hundreds of millions of people in the 20th century, their ideology based on Marxism was the bloodiest ideology ever seen. They used force to control people. We thankfully are not seeing today's neo-Marxist using, hard force, but nonetheless, they are wanting to use human rights commissions and the law to try and control us. And I think we've got to resist that wherever it occurs.
Let's take another call before we move on in our conversation. Rabinia is in Bunbury in WA. Hello, Rabinia. Welcome along.
316 Lyle. Let's take a...
Rabinia, might need to turn your radio down in the background. What are your thoughts for Lyle Shelton?
Hello, Rabinia. Welcome along.
Good morning.
Rabinia, what are your thoughts?
Good to hear you.
Hang on, can I turn the wireless off, please?
Yes, that's a good idea. We'll wait just a moment. It's always good to do that. There is a 10-second delay.
I'm terribly sorry.
That's
okay. I've been waiting on the line and trying to hear you at the same time.
Thank you for waiting
so
patiently.
We've been having a prayer meeting each Friday for the freedom, and I got it from the Liberals, that the five members on the panel. What I'm asking is, what are the prayer points that we should be praying for?
Okay, there's
a Keswick Convention is coming up in Perth. It's at Camp Wattle Grove, and quite a number of people go there, and they have a lot of little stands. We did have Family Voice there, and that's where I got involved, interested in Family Voice, because I didn't know anything about it before.
Okay, well, what you're really asking here, Robinia, is how do you pray for the freedoms in Australia, given what is happening with the Freedom Review that's on, and the likelihood that there's not going to be an optimistic outcome there? Lyle Shelton, what are your thoughts for Robinia?
Yeah, well, thanks, Robinia, for praying. This is really, really important. I think we need to pray that hearts will be softened and that our politicians will see the importance of allowing freedom of speech when it comes to marriage. We lost that when the marriage legislation went through last year. A number of amendments were put to the parliament. They were voted down, even by members of the Liberal and National parties. And so we want to see those freedoms restored so that no one has any fear about speaking out loud that they believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, that they won't be taken off to a human rights commission as a bigot or a homophobe or some other terrible slur that's cast upon them. We want Christian schools to be free to teach children that marriage is between a man and a woman and that gender is as people were born biologically, male and female. So that, the freedom to talk about those things openly has been lost in this nation. And this Ruddock review that Neil's been talking about is looking at this, but unless there's political will to legislate to protect that freedom, we're in a lot of trouble.
Robinia from Bunbury, thank you so much for your call. And it is good to reinforce this idea of how you pray, because as you say, Lyle Shelton, the prayer for political will to maintain freedoms is a key here.
That's it, yep.
And at the moment, our Christianity has largely been sidelined. People have been trying to silence the debate. But if we're talking about freedom, our Christianity actually is important as an ingredient or an element of how those freedoms are in fact maintained. What are your thoughts on why it is that's important that Christianity is a part of maintaining these freedoms?
Yeah, I think this goes right back to the very basics of how we came to even have a democratic and a free society. And it's good to reflect on this, particularly with where we are today, where these freedoms are under pressure. When America was founded over 200 years ago, people like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, who'll be names that are familiar to us from history, they said things like this, and I'll just quote this from Jefferson. He said, "Can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God?" Now, this is Thomas Jefferson, who was one of the founders of the United States, one of the drafters of the U.S. Declaration of Independence. And there's even a better quote from one of his contemporaries, John Adams, who was the first vice president and the second president. He said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." So the reason for sharing these quotes, Neil, is that to show people that the American founders, and not all of them were Christian, although most were, they knew that the only way for a free society to exist was for there to be virtue in the population, and that virtue came from faith, which, of course, in those days was Christian faith. And I think we forget this, that it doesn't matter how many laws a government creates, you can't make a society free through the heavy hand of the law. But a society can be free if people know how to govern themselves because they have virtue, and of course virtue doesn't come in a vacuum, it comes from a religious, or I would say a Christian ethic. And I think that's what we're missing as a nation. We've gone away from our Christian ethic, therefore we don't even know how to govern ourselves, we don't know how to be virtuous, and therefore we're wondering why our freedoms are being eroded so rapidly.
And of course in our own Australian constitution, if we're reflecting back on Australian history and Federation, the inference that is so strong that our own constitution is framed in relation to the Christianity of the day, which was very, very strong. In fact, almost every Australian was not only Christian but went along to church in those days. And yes, there was some opposition to some of the things that were being talked about in relation to the formation of our constitution, but by and large it is a Christian document.
Well like America, Australia's founding was democratic, and we drew from the American founding. That's why I think it's important to look at those quotes from the likes of Jefferson and Adams, and there were many others as well, because Australia copied so much of what was good about the US founding in terms of having a free and open society. We also copied their idea of separation of church and state. Now, that never meant keep Christians out of politics. What it meant is that the church doesn't run the government, and that everyone's free to pursue their religion, free from government interference. Now, we've gone a long way from that. But I think it's important for us to realise that. And of course, at our founding, there was public pressure to include reference to God in the preamble of the Constitution. We have the words humbly relying on the blessing of Almighty God. So there was something right at the start of the American founding and the Australian founding, which was precious, which recognised the importance of Christianity and its contribution. And I would submit that you can't have a free society unless you have a virtuous society, and that virtue will come from a religion which has goodness and allows people to flourish. And of course, as a Christian, I believe Christianity is best placed to do that. And if we can recover those Christian values and virtues, I think that'll go a long way towards restoring our nation.
And we may have to fight for this freedom that we're talking about. And it doesn't get lost on me that it actually is a significant anniversary today. And today, the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr., his death, assassinated at the age of just 39 years. And I know it's a surprise to all of us when we hear that when he began to lead that civil rights movement in the US, he was only 26 years of age. And the capacity that he had to lead that movement and to, in fact, bring about all of the seeds and making the nation ready for change was because they had this freedom, this Christian foundation that said, basically, you know, men and women created in the image and likeness of God, all of those things taken for granted in a Christian constitution in the United States. This is the sort of foundation that allows change to happen and that allows us to fight for freedoms, Lyle Shelton.
Absolutely. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. is one of the most inspirational figures of history, and you're right. He drew from his knowledge of Christianity and the idea that men and women were created equal, that people had dignity in the eyes of God regardless of their skin color. And that challenged Americans who considered themselves Christians, but somehow had rationalized in their minds that they could treat black people differently. And he pricked the consciences of a nation, but he had to fight for it. He had to work hard. He even led people in civil disobedience. There's the famous march on the bridge at Selma, if people have seen the movie. Now, I hope we don't ever have to come to civil disobedience, but we have to fight for the truth about the human condition today, not about whether black or white people should be treated the same, but we have to fight for the truth about whether male and femaleness is a thing anymore, and whether children can be taught a lie about their gender. Now, we must fight for these things. We have to fight for the dignity of the unborn and human rights for the unborn. These are things which our society has discarded, and they need advocates, and that's what Martin Luther King was. He was an advocate for his cause. He spoke fearlessly. His people were beaten as a result of it. They were persecuted. We need advocates who are going to speak up for the injustices that we see in our society that are perpetrated on the most vulnerable.
And not lost on me either that when we talk about Martin Luther King Jr., we need to identify one very important aspect which sometimes gets neglected. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Here was a Christian man, a minister of the gospel, who recognized even in himself a calling to respond to the needs of his people because they were not experiencing the freedoms that were, the inalienable rights that get talked about. So this idea of him being the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., this is something significant too, and I'll get your perspective here, Lyle Shelton, that because he was a Christian minister of the gospel, here he found himself in a political challenge, and that's something we need to see more of these days.
Absolutely, and this is where I think Christianity should interact with politics in calling out injustice. Martin Luther King was a reverend. I think, though, in the interests of full disclosure, and history records this, that he wasn't a man who was faithful to his wife, so he didn't live up to some really important Christian standards and convictions, and I'm really sad about that. There's the FBI actually tape recorded his many affairs and sent the tapes to his wife to try and damage him, and that's a really sad part of his life. Character, I believe, does matter. Nonetheless, in spite of those very, very deep flaws, he was able to still appropriate those incredible Christian principles and be a voice for them. So, look, no one is perfect, but I think it is important we realise this man, whilst a great orator and a great leader and someone who drew from the principles of the Bible, didn't always live up to those standards.
Visions 2020 with Neil Johnson. A biblical perspective on life, culture, and current events.
An opportunity today to get an update on what's happening with Lyle Shelton. He is these days the Australian Conservatives Federal Communications Director, having made that transition from leading the Australian Christian Lobby now into a political role, and expectant that he will be one of those who will be a candidate for the Australian Conservatives in an upcoming federal election. Let's, conscious of our shortage of time here, Lyle Shelton, but when we talk about the economic issues that you're going to be needing to confront, sometimes in our conversations over the years, mostly on the social issues, the challenges that we face as a nation, moving into this political realm, you're going to be needing to be across economic issues as well. What are the biggest economic issues that you're working on so far as the nation goes today?
Yeah, well, look, I'm an economic and a social conservative, but the two biggest economic issues which I think we face a crisis in this nation is to do with energy and to do with debt. And the energy debate is raging at the moment. We can't seem to find a way forward to ensure that when coal-fired power stations close down, as they have in Victoria and as Liddell Power Station in the Hunter Valley is slated to do, how are we going to replace that generating capacity? I've been very alarmed about this for some time. I did not know that our climate change policies meant closing down coal-fired generation without having a proper plan to replace baseload power. And this is why the government is in such a mess at the moment, scrambling to try and find a solution to this, but not quite having the courage to say, well, we need more coal-fired power stations. They're building, 40 of these in China and Japan at the moment as we speak, and yet in Australia, with hundreds and hundreds of years of supply of coal, we can't even build high energy, low emission power stations. The new technology that reduces carbon emissions, we can't even get one of these on the drawing board to replace the generating capacity we're about to lose.
And politics is one of those games that get played, and it's a serious game, of course, but it is a game. And of course, there's what is called now the Monash Forum, which appears to undermine the Turnbull federal government's energy policy, and there's all sorts of criticisms around that. Is there something that's emerging with this Monash Forum within the Conservative side of politics which has a deeper political meaning here, Lyle Shelton? Have you looked into all of that?
Look, I've been following the debate closely. I don't want to get involved in the internal machinations of the Liberal Party. There may or may not be leadership issues tied up and all that, but I think the concern is right, and that is that we need to see coal-fired power stations being built to replace the generating capacity. You can't just shut down massive coal-fired power stations in the Latrobe Valley in Victoria and in the Hunter Valley and keep the lights on. And this is, you know, solar and wind and you know, renewable technology is fantastic, but it's not at the point where it can replace baseload power. And it won't be at that point anytime soon. And so I think we do need to have a debate about how we are able to get the next coal-fired power stations up and running. Our preference at Australian Conservatives is that we get the government out of it and that we provide the contractual certainty and the operating environment certainty, the regulatory framework to allow private enterprise to come and do what they do best, and that is produce what's needed for the market.
The big challenge for you, Lyle Shelton, is going to be how you, in fact, cut through and get airtime in the media. Because while the reporting will happen largely around what the major parties are talking, and if you're talking energy policy or any other policy economically, you're going to have trouble cutting through. People are going to need to look more deeply at how the policies for the Australian Conservatives go, but clearly, in order to really get traction with the next federal election, you're going to need to have some airtime, and so therefore you might need to be out on a limb, saying controversial things even to actually attract some headlines. That's a big challenge for you ahead, isn't it?
Well, it is. I don't want to say things just for the sake of getting media attention. Much of what I've stood for all of my life, as I've been fighting for conservative social values for the last 10 years, has been controversial nonetheless and does attract media attention. Some of the things that we're saying as a party on the economic front, whether it's about energy or trying to bring down our $750 billion or heading towards $750 billion worth of debt, these things are controversial. But anyone who is a candidate or seeking political office has this trouble, and it's just a case of working hard. We have social media these days. We have Facebook, Twitter, and the like, and we'll be using every channel we can to get our message out over the next 6 to 12 months.
No doubt, Lyle Shelton, with the merger of Family First and the Australian Conservatives, there is a tremendous base that has come in there to support the Australian Conservatives. No doubt you'll be looking to increase that base. What is your encouragement to people who are feeling as though perhaps they ought to be doing something politically and looking for an outlet, and just giving you this opportunity here to say to people how they can support Australian Conservatives in the times to come? What's your encouragement to listeners?
Look, my encouragement to people, if they resonate with the things that I've been saying here, that they might want to consider joining Australian Conservative, being part of this political movement. I really believe we need a political movement to effect the change that's needed in this nation, and that of course needs a vast grassroots army, both here in Queensland but right across the nation. So people can go to our website, our Facebook page. They can have a look at the sort of policies that we're putting forward. As someone who's a Christian, obviously I want to appeal to Christian voters, but I don't presume or assume that all Christians see things from my political perspective. But if there are people who are concerned about freedom of religion, about gender, about freedom of speech, about good economic stewardship of our nation, then they might want to consider having a look at what Australian Conservatives has to offer.
Listeners will know that you moved from Canberra to Queensland, but of course Australian Conservatives right around Australia, and you'll be looking to form some solid core constituencies in all of the states and territories around Australia. And if people go to the website, are they able to link with those particular groups?
Yeah, absolutely. Conservatives.org.au is our website. We have divisions in each state, and people can get involved there. You can have a look at our policies. You can decide whether or not that aligns with your views as a Christian. But I would just encourage people to get involved. We can't sit back apathetically anymore. We are the victims of silence, when good people have stayed out of political fights for far too long. We're in a new era in our nation where good people need to get involved, and that's why I've got involved, and I'd encourage others to do the same.
We have run out of time. Lyle Shelton, the Australian Conservatives Federal Communications Director, that website one more time, conservatives.org.au. Thanks to those who called in through the hour. Thanks to those who have made Facebook comments. We haven't been able to talk some more about those, but thanks for everyone who's participated. Lyle Shelton, thanks for being with us today on 2020.
It's been a real pleasure, Neil. Thank you so much.
Before you go, thanks for listening.
There's lots more great audio on demand, or you can listen to us live at visionradio.org.au.
And remember, Vision is listener supported. Your donation,
large or small,
will help us continue connecting faith to life for hundreds of thousands of people across Australia and around the world.
Learn more or donate today at visionradio.org.au.